It's now time to think outside the box of what we've always known.
I myself will tend my sheep and have them lie down, declares the sovereign Lord.
I think that's a profound turning point in somebody's relationship with God.
And our hope in starting this was that this would become an ever-expanding conversation.
Just two real guys talking about life. That's a nice tagline.
I'm Wayne Jacobson.
And I'm Brad Cummings.
And welcome to another edition of The God Journey.
Well, this is show number 250.
What?
We've done 250 of these podcasts, and there are still people who go back and listen to all of them.
It's That's like getting close to almost 5 years, isn't it? If I just do simple math, we got like 10
weeks. This is March. Yeah, we've completed 5 years. We're moving.
Wow.
We didn't do one a week early on. We kind of merged into one a week, but yeah.
Wow.
Kind of crazy, isn't
We're
it?
Still friends.
We're still friends?
Hey, happy birthday, by the way. I wished you happy birthday there, but we're doing a podcast now, so.
Yeah, so it's a good time.
But you choked your inbox with a whole bunch of birthday greetings.
I didn't do the choking. Other people did the choking.
Inbox choked.
I choked it yesterday for other reasons, Facebook went crazy and people. I mean, I got greetings all day long, and it was kind of
nice.
Many were just happy birthday, which is great. You're reminded of these people, the ones that I know. I don't know everybody on my Facebook.
Oh, the computer reminders. Yes. Okay.
No. People who just say happy birthday, and you get to remember their name if you know them. There's some people
right.
I go, yeah, I'm not sure who they are, but.
Close friends.
Other people took the moment just to tell them how much they appreciated my life and, my writings or whatever, how that impacted them. So it was it was just constant. There were like 50 an hour coming through my Facebook page. So it was a little busy. But
an affirming day?
Affirming day.
That's
and a great
cool.
day. The girls were over. My kids were over. We played some bocce ball on the grass. And
That's cool.
Hang out with each other. Just love my family. Love a day with family. It's just wonderful
stuff. Isn't it great to be 37?
Yeah, it was. It was. But I'm 57, dude. I'm pushing the old 60, and then I can retire. I'm thinking of retiring at 60.
You're 2 miles out, 2 years over the speed limit. Ooh, baby.
I am.
Wow.
But I really blew it up yesterday. I was in
Senior Citizen Access anywhere? Or is that 65?
Yeah, we get in cheaper at the theater.
Oh, sweet.
It's not giving me a break on the golf yet. I asked, and I was like, no, you got to be 60
for the golf.
Popcorn
discounts or no? Full
freight
on that?
No. But you get almost the matinee price anytime you want to go. Sarah and I have had that for a little while. I was 55, I think, so we've been enjoying that for a couple of years. But I blew it up yesterday.
What do you mean you blew it up?
Well, I went in for a dentist appointment yesterday, and they were trying to replace a filling that had some decay around it, and the filling was cracked, whatever. But they got beneath it, and it
went
clear down to the root, and this thing kept going on. Now we're going to do a root canal, and this was space age dentistry, man. The last dentist I had was an old geezer who retired, and I didn't know the technology had changed significantly.
You've been missing visits for a while, have you?
No, I haven't been missing visits, but my guy retired.
Oh.
So I had to find
a new
guy.
Your guy was still using the laser light.
So I got a young guy, and I am telling you what, they take so many pictures and models on computers.
Space age wizardry in the mouth.
So in the middle of this, I had all this crap in my mouth. Excuse me. Excuse me, Julie. I had all this mechanical equipment in my mouth holding my contorted face and various things, and they all left the room. I'm like, oh, boy. So I pulled up my iPhone, and I just Facebook.
Took a picture.
No, I just went to Facebook and said, came here for a filling. Now they're doing a root canal, and now everybody left me, and I've got this junk in my mouth. And people started writing back. It was hilarious. And I had a little comedic relief. One guy said, are you painfully disillusioned?
There you go.
But anyway, at the end of it, nothing's going on. So I finally turn around, and the dentist is sitting next to my chair looking the other way, and he's typing into a computer, and so I'm looking at what he's doing. He's got a full picture of my mouth. He's rotating this 3D model.
Carving your tooth.
And he's shaping the crown they're going to put over this area that they've just laid waste to. And I'm kind of joking. He said, and you're going to print that out when you're done? He said, absolutely am. I'm going, really? And he pulled this little block. It's like a little smaller than a dice. And it shows me this little block of ivory or whatever it was. And he said, yeah, we're going to cut this right out into your tooth in just a minute. And I'm going, really?
Michelangelo, right there to your left.
So when he got ready to print it, he showed me, took me around to the printer. And this little block is sitting in there. There's water in these zippy drill bits. And he just pushes print. And water squirting. And these things are just working all over this thing. And just pairs this right down into the shape of my tooth. I had no idea these things were out there.
Dude, that's like an episode from Star Trek.
It was wild. And then, you know, you don't get that temporary crown and got to go back and then rip it off with a crowbar later.
Yeah, that would have worked for Jacobson there. You had that fruit of patience powerfully.
So that's really sucky. But anyway, they got it in, and I had my Facebook friends help me get through my dentist appointment yesterday.
Oh, there you go.
That was kind of wild for sure.
A little cyber encouragement there for you.
For sure. Excuse me a moment. I'll get back to the podcast in just a moment. But when we were together earlier today, Brad and I forgot to update you folks on the Kenya offering we've been taking to help with some of the immediate needs there. We've taken in about 7,000 the last 2 weeks and incredibly grateful for those of you that have participated with us in that way. Thank you so much. There's more we'd like to do there. So if there's anything more in your heart or some of you haven't had a chance to let us know yet, there's links at the blog and at livestream.org if you would like to help us help them. Thank you. Now, back to the podcast. Got some wonderful email at the end of our last couple of shows. Since we haven't done a lot of email lately, let's catch up.
We still get a lot.
We do get tons. And we don't get everybody's on here, but some of them just feel like – and the reason we do is not that some are more important than others. It just seems like some would resonate more with other people. Some are just really personal and what someone is going through, but others seem to – wow, other folks would care about this. Jerry on the blog said this, wow, how perfect the discussion was for me today. After sitting under the tree in a mournful, I'm the only one that gets this living loved thing, I realized how introverted, confining, and religious this brand of self-centeredness is. Thanks so much for your conversation between the two of you guys that opened my eyes today. I do long for the type of conversations I once had in a small group of guys as far as relating and encouraging each other goes, but have realized that my self-pity in its absence has caused a blindness to the immediate and freeing work of the developing present relationships and conversations. Thanks for just conversating together. I think that's a new word. Thanks for just conversating together as you do and waking guys like me up to the joy of the present and the freedom of now in Jesus.
That's sweet.
Isn't that cool?
You know, one of the things I've found is some of the most fruitful conversations I've had have been with people that I would have to say I hadn't a clue when I began whether they were spiritual or not, whether they had anything there or not. And because I wasn't speaking some insider language or a code, in order to make this real and understandable, I had to talk in a different context. I wasn't having a spiritual discussion.
Right.
And because of really wanting to talk about and figure out what they thought and to talk through that, those have been some of the most amazing conversations I've had that are just full of life. And I found out that, you know, half the time the people I'm talking to, no, they wouldn't list themselves on the home team.
Yeah.
But they're very spiritually interested. And because we were having a very real conversation as opposed to a pre-sales meeting.
Right.
You know, like I wasn't trying to bring an agenda. I just trying to figure out, well, what do you think? You know, I'm curious about this. Those have been some of those amazing conversations. I mean, if you're wondering, gosh, I wish I could have a conversation. It's just a matter of being honest and communicating with another interested person.
Yeah.
I think those are available to us left, right, and center if we'd avail ourselves of that.
It's almost like the blindness of those, that religious veneer in the old days of you can only really be safe talking with people who see things the same way you do.
Yeah, and I don't find those conversations very illuminating.
They're not. And we get tons of email about how do I find people on the same page as me? Jesus didn't seem to worry about finding people on the same page as he was. I mean, he wasn't the woman at the well, I can't talk to her because she doesn't know what I know. And I can't talk to Zacchaeus because that guy's a moron. And, you know, he just engaged people where they were. And like you said, found himself in some amazing conversations. And I know some of Sarah and my closest friendships now of people that live near us that we're meeting are not people who are on the same spiritual journey we're on at all.
Yeah.
But we enjoy their friendship. We enjoy their communion. And like you say, some of those conversations, some wonderful things get engaged there because a lot of people are interested in spiritual things, even if they've abandoned religion or hate religion or whatever. And I go, wow, we really limit ourselves particularly if people start seeing this whole living love thing or, you know, outside of more religious structures and go, okay, I'm going to find people who are thinking this way too. Well, if God brings somebody to your life, that's great. Enjoy those. But you really don't have to have those. You really don't. There's lots of conversations to have and people to know and friendships to let grow that don't just have to be just like I see it and I believe it, and I need people to keep propping me up in the things that I suppose
I mean,
know.
I am an out loud processor. I mean, there's people who do that internally. I'm not one of those. And so I get far more understanding in my own life when I kind of sort it through with somebody else. And I don't find myself limited as to, well, I only have a couple of people that I can talk this stuff through with. I'm just going like, the guy was working on our garage doors. I had a great conversation with him.
Yeah.
I still haven't a clue where he's at.
Yeah.
But if you're just talking about, here's what life is like, and I'm not pulling any punches, because I'm not trying to make a sales pitch, and I'm not trying to close the deal, but I'm just talking about life, I find that God inhabits those in a really wonderful way for me, too.
Yeah.
Not just, oh, I think I'll have a spiritual conversation with that guy.
Well, it's fun to recognize that people are interesting and worth being known and loved, whether or not you get to close a deal or do any of that stuff. It's just, people are worth taking interest in all for themselves. And when you don't have the agenda of, I need fellowship, I need encouragement, I need affirmation, whatever, I can just go into the relationship and be aware of them and connect as two human beings on the planet, wonderful things happen almost all the time for me.
And just, I mean, as a little encouragement to anybody out there, the reality is most people don't have someone doing that with them. So when you make an overture, boy, are they responsive. Boy, are they appreciative. It's like the love that they feel just because I'm not relating to someone based on a purpose or a function. But I am showing interest in them.
Yeah.
That's wonderful.
We all like to tell our story. We all like to be known. When people take an interest, the most boring people in the world are people that are just stuck on themselves. What is it they want? I mean, I find the most boring.
They're not just boring. They're annoying.
Very annoying.
I mean, forgive me, but they're annoying.
But people who just, you get involved in the conversation and you learn stuff that they know that you don't know, and you just enjoy who they are as people for whatever. I mean, if I'm sitting by them on a plane or waiting at a gate to get on a plane or whatever, and just even turning to them and say, hey, how you doing? And just that quick, sometimes it goes somewhere. Sometimes it doesn't. And it doesn't matter. Yeah. I'm not trying to make it happen, which is cool. I like Pat's response to Whether We're Mockers or Not podcast.
Uh-huh.
I like this. She said, I get so much out of your podcast. I love your insights and how you communicate the Father's love and your honesty about how real life works. Sometimes on the podcast, you respond to listeners who have issues with something you've said in a prior podcast. The fact is, every week I hear something I don't agree with or that I could take offense to, but it doesn't bother me in the least.
Me too.
She said, but it doesn't bother me in the least. That's because I'm not vested in you guys being right. Although you have helped me immensely in my walk with the Father, I have no desire to make you my next guru.
Oh, awesome.
I love it.
Standing ovation right here.
Yeah.
I'm in here.
I'm standing up. Look at that.
Nice one.
This is the first standing O we've ever had.
This is the first standing ovation I've given.
On a podcast. Anytime. Yes. Watching too much American Idol, are you?
No.
Oh.
No, that's worth it right there.
Man, I tell you, I really like that kind of heart. And she said, you know, you guys trying to explain yourselves and make yourselves right, isn't that you falling into that guru thing? And I wrote back, I don't think so. I think when people challenge something that we're saying, if they misunderstood, I don't mind going back and say, this is what we really mean. I don't think we want to be right about everything. And
I'm pretty sure we're not.
Well, I think, and I think we've made
we
great
may not
allowance.
Know it, but I'm pretty sure we're not.
And I think we've made great allowance for that fact on here. This is from Carolyn. This is, and I got a lot of email about that very last little bit we did on the last podcast about that guy hearing the expression, you have no idea how much I love you.
Yeah.
I had a similar experience, actually. I think I've told it on a previous podcast, 273 ago or whatever it was, but
only 250.
I was having a really, really brutal time. This is way back in pastoring days, and there was something going on. I just was brutalized by it, and I just felt so abandoned by God. And I remember laying down in the bed at night. Sarah had already gone to sleep, and I'd been up a little bit later reading. And I came to bed, and I just flipped on the clock radio just to make sure the volume was right to wake me up in the morning. And it was an old John Denver song that was, and it wasn't old back in the day. This is back in the day when it was fairly new. And it's a love song. And it was a husband, I guess, to the wife saying, I wish you knew how much I loved you. And I just heard the chorus, that phrase. And I remember God just going, you don't have a clue. I wish you knew how much I loved you. And this is old Wayne on the performance treadmill days. This is not Wayne discovering. And I thought, well, God, I know that you love me. Yes. I remember crying. I remember laying in bed just going, gosh, you love me. That's great. I look back now going, man, I still didn't have a clue. I'm not sure I do now, but I know I do have a bit more of a clue now than I had back then.
No, but isn't that amazing how it's not as if, oh, here's the dawn of a new revelation. It's like it takes a while to get pickled to a place of deep understanding where your base foundation is not the cerebral attempt of living loved, but it's knowing.
Yeah.
And living as someone who is loved. I don't know that that's a lifelong journey. It is a glorious lifelong journey.
I think it's a lifelong journey because I go through moments now of tension and anxiety or whatever. And in the middle of that, my almost first thought is, I have no idea how much he loves me. I wouldn't be anxious about this. I wouldn't be. So I'm still, God, win me into the space. Win me into a greater dimension of I'm loved enough by you that no matter how this situation plays out, you're still going to be in it with me and you're still going to be at work. And
you think of just how we would interpret circumstances different. If I was looking through the lens that I was clear on, God loves me, now let me interpret my circumstance, I think our emotions would be informed with far different feelings than we're assaulted with when we look at those same circumstances and put that thought on the auction block of wondering, do my circumstances determine and tell me that, affirm me that I'm loved? Because I think that sense of abandonment, that fear of it, is so powerful and so painful that my capacity to distort what I'm seeing is profound.
Yeah, and I think our shame-based brokenness does look at first when something bad happens. Ooh, I must not be in sorts with God. There must be a problem. I mean, it's like our pain proves we're on the other side of God.
Yeah, see, I knew I was in trouble.
Yeah, I knew I wasn't doing enough, and I should be doing more. And that's the problem. It's not so much that we could come at it through the lens of, okay, I know he loves me in this. It's almost the default position seems to be the pain, the sickness, the unhealing, the whatever's not happening is proof that I'm not good enough for God or doing enough to make him happy with me.
Yeah, I just know that, you know, the same circumstances viewed from that different window produce very different feelings in my heart. And you sit there, it's like, now, wait a minute. If that's true, it's not like, well, gee, pick your reality. Well, but to some degree, it's like, well, yeah, but why don't we interpret reality based upon that being 2 + 2? God loves me. That's true. That one's not up for grabs. And it's not even up for grabs when I'm a heinous jerk.
It needs to be. But getting there is a bit of a... I think that's what it means to learn to live love.
Yeah.
Because we may even know that in our head, but our heart, our feelings, our guilt, everything else is screaming.
Yeah.
Ah! Carolyn said this, I cried through this podcast. It was as if Father was answering questions I asked just this morning. I am in just such a place of not necessarily disillusionment, but it's more like bewilderment or disorientation. Where the heck am I? I'm struggling with a need to be accepted by people for who I am when I'm not even sure who that is right now.
Hmm.
Someone mentioned in one of the letters that still small voice whispering, you have no idea how much I love you. And I had to get up and walk away from my desk. I'm at work. And when I heard the same sweet voice whisper to me, relax, just let me love you. Great podcast. Thanks, guys. Thank you, Carol. That's great.
That's awesome.
That's a home run. I would give it a standing O, but let's not get caught in that.
Oh, one per podcast.
And Richard in Sweden sent this about...
In Sweden,
about first love. Just now, that means a home... talking about their fellowship is just a home group every other week, and some very interesting conversation occurs we freely share together. Last week, the conversation came to living for God and what that meant in different people's minds. And the subject came up that if we'd kept our first love, then we would be doing things for God. I said, it seems to me that Jesus did things with God instead of for him, and that our doing things for him is usually what wears us out and makes us feel like failures. This gave rise to several people saying that they have always felt that doing things for him usually ended in failure. One woman said that she heard a nun once say to her that keeping your first love is really keeping yourself in a place where you can receive and accept his love, because without that love, you will always end up in self-effort and then failure to live up to your expectations. What an insight. One man remarked, that's a bit different from feeling that we have to show God our greatest love first, as he always felt a failure doing that. I love that contrast between if you're going to do it for God, you're going to fail. If you can do things with him and inside his love, then that's what works out in our lives, even when we struggle, even when things don't sort out the way we hope.
You know, I mean, we talked about this briefly at the tail end of last podcast.
Yeah, I wanted to come back to that.
But that's where I sort of feel like I think we've really misinterpreted and missed a whole profound part of the life of Christ, and that was just the simple growing up. The fact that he came as a baby, I can't get my mind around that. That still just baffles me, going like, gosh, if I was God and I was really about the important work of the redemption of all mankind, I'm not really sure that I would have thought, well, you know, let's do this as a baby. I really would have sort of cut to the chase. Let's get to the meat. Get into it. Just be an avatar. Show up, you know.
Drop him in there fully grown.
Yeah, lock and load, you know.
Here I am.
And it's like the very fact that you get, you know, 9 months of gestation inside a womb. Everything's still going on, and it's like you don't even got eyeballs on the deal.
It kind of blows the whole send in the Calvary idea, huh?
Well, yeah, you're just going like, okay, this is wild, just that. And then the fact that you have him growing up as a dependent infant, being loved by a mom and a dad, and being a brother.
And being picked on by brothers, probably.
And sure. And just the reality of 30 years of normal life. And I think we sort of gloss over it because everyone met him that was penning it. They met him in the ministry time.
Right.
The guys that were playing with him in the neighborhood didn't think to write a gospel. And I just find it's mind-blowing that it's like, look, God, for 30 years, was just validating the living of life. Normal, no achievement-based, no grand epic scale, no revivals to schedule.
No purpose-centered, found my vision, gotta...
I just sit there, it's like, wait a minute. We have tripped over the 90% of what he spent his time doing, which was simply the living of normal, everyday life. And it's like, how did we not value that? Because we don't.
Because it covers a very small little bit of the Gospels. There's hardly anything said about it.
I know, but it's like if someone were to show up in your life now, and they really get captured by what's going on in your life, and they're a writer guy. Well, no, they weren't there for 56 years of it. They only picked you up in the last one.
Yep.
Well, how could they write about what they had not been doing? Is that unimportant? Those 56 years are the whole building up to what is happening in the 57th.
Yeah.
There's not one of them that's unimportant. But just because you're writing about in the present tense of what's going on, I think we've made a massive interpretive error to not recognize there's a profound statement there. God wasn't in a hurry to save the world, so to speak. He was doing it one day at a time, just living normal life. And the affirmation that I find of just going like, you know what? I don't have to get up and achieve something. I get to just celebrate and enjoy. This is part of what is holy.
Yeah.
Just living.
I was with a 24-year-old last week, and he was talking about, you know, adrift and not having vision for his life, and some friends that had left college and were doing some major things in the world, and he had yet to find a purpose that was worthy of his effort or energy or whatever. And I was thinking some of those things, and I'm going, gee, you're 24, dude. Just, I mean, live life. I think those big pictures, if there are big picture things coming, they unfold. I remember being burdened, and I'll use the word burdened, with vision at 24. I thought God had called me for special stuff, and I had to find my way into that stuff. I look back now, and even though people thought, you know, I was published at a very young age in Leadership Journal, and all those things were great achievements.
Ooh.
Inside, what it was looking like in here was none of that was satisfying. What I thought God wanted me to be in the world, and I had to keep pursuing this larger vision, this larger whatever. And it was not a blessing in my life. Not one bit of it was a blessing. It was oppressive. It was wearying. It was frustrating. I remember every night going to bed with this anger at God that you're not honoring. You know, the first book published at a very young age, but didn't sell very well. So, and I just wrote this recently in my newsletter, you know, because I really wanted people to engage that whole thing of, we look at the end result of something, and that's what we all try to live every day. Even we forget that Paul spent 17 years in the wilderness between his conversion and seemingly his going out and doing much to expand the gospel in the world. We don't have that kind of patience. We don't have the kind of thing that says, God, I want you to change me significantly. I get the email a lot from guys who were pastors coming to grips with some of the realities that we talk about here. And they're looking for the next thing. How do I want to teach people this stuff. And how do I find my audience now? What venue do I create that? And you're just kind of going, ooh, take a deep breath, dude. It really doesn't happen that way. And you look at God's, dare we say, patience about even rescuing the world. I mean, you're talking about 9 months in a womb, 30 years growing up. What about the 4,500 years between the fall and Christ coming into the world?
Setting the stage.
Yeah, God just working things out in a way that deeply satisfies him. And yet we still have this, if God was really on my side, he'd be come rushing in with the cavalry to rescue me.
And well, yeah, even the sense that, well, you know, if God, doesn't God know? And it's like, more than any of us. Yes, he actually does know. Maybe we're the ones that haven't a clue from his perspective what's going on. I mean, I look at the last 10 years. The last three have been exhausting. The seven before were almost boring. But I think more was happening in the simple outworking of daily life in me. When all of the achievement and all of the outward trappings were stripped away, and I was being brought to a place of just like, well, what do you really know? What do you really think? And
who really are you without all the other
achievement
stuff that you think is so critical?
Yeah. How hey Brad, how do you define yourself now? You're just going like, most of the days I didn't have a clue. Because I didn't have a tag. I didn't have that epic destiny I was carrying in my backpack. Yeah. You're just going like, but God really freed me from that. I mean, I think when I saw that movie, The Human Experience, I got to tell you, it was just sort of like there was something profound in that that shifted me to just go, this incredible gift called life, I don't think I have cherished it appropriately. Hmm. I don't think I've looked at another human being with the appropriate value that God would place on them. I mean, that movie unveiled lies that you and I, if we were just told, do you want to live that life? We go, I'd sooner die. And then out of the mouth of those very people comes this incredible appreciation of mere interaction with another human being with a sense of awe I've never emotionally connected with. And it was like a leg sweep to a lot of what I think I've thought was important. And it's really shifted my heart, just going like, gosh, Lord, from this vantage point, this whole world is afresh with new mystery to me. I love what's going on. I love looking at the mountainside that we live under. Mm-hmm. And I just go like, wow. I mean, I may be in a weird philosophical place, but it's just kind of like, there's a sense of going like, Lord, living from this standpoint and looking at all of it from the perspective of what an incredible gift and how there isn't a sense of, I must, I better get up and I have to do this. The drivenness that life can just fall on you. And there's a sense of going like, I don't want to live in that space. I want to live with the sense of, Lord, if you want me to do that, great. I'll do it with all my heart. If you want me just to sit here, that's no less valuable. And I don't know that I ever actually thought that.
Yeah, and to see the relationships and the conversations around us as they unfold.
Yeah.
As being maybe even, dare we say, more significant than the publishing and the writing and the podcasting and all those other things that we think are the larger achievement. And when I have conversations with people around the world, so many others want to find their way into. And you go, maybe that's the false area. Because even those last 10% of Jesus' life, living as past 30 in, quote unquote, his ministry, it was still less about trying to accomplish something than it was loving people. You don't get from the ministry of Jesus this strategized,
game on, here we go.
Yeah, I planted the church now, and I've equipped these disciples to be. You have to read that into the text. Jesus is just living and loving and letting his life spill out.
He isn't doing anything different.
No.
And I think that would greatly educate our interpretation of that, because he picked 12 guys to hang out with and loved them. And it's sort of like, okay, well, see ya. I mean, he did the cross thing.
Yeah.
but the idea that somehow, okay, well, you guys take it from here. There wasn't this sense of, now, remember everything. You sure you got all this down? Yeah. Did anyone take notes? I mean,
Or even the morning he meets the woman at the well, for instance. Did he get up and say, you know, today we're going to launch our Samaritan strategy, and we're going to have a hour-long intercession time for Samaria.
I found the fuse.
And then we're going to figure out what we can do to share the gospel with Samaria, and then we'll go in there and we'll do it. And you bring all the human wisdom into that of, well, let's do a few miracles, or let's go down to the Hippodrome and do a big sermon, or let's, you know.
You'd mess it up if you did that.
He just went as a woman at a well. He's tired. He sits by the well. A gal comes up. He starts a conversation. Not only does she come to know who he is, she gets her whole family. They come to know who he is. And it just spills out of a relationship. It's not a strategy. It's not, we got to work something here to make it happen. And everything you would work, even in your most, you know, like when you sent them out two by two and they got to heal, let's go into Samaria and heal everyone, because that will create something. Well, not this time. It didn't create that. I had an interesting question when I was in Kenya. I thought it was kind of a, well, that's kind of interesting. I think it's obvious on the face of it. But people were saying, how come Jesus over here sends the disciples out and he tells them, take nothing? And then when it comes up to the upper room, he's telling them, you know, last time I told you take nothing, this time I'm telling you pick up a sword and take it with you as we're going out. Why come Jesus says, you know, one time take nothing and one time take a sword, and like there was some big principle we needed to learn? And my answer was, I think the point is there is no principle. When Jesus tells you take something, take something. When he tells you take nothing, take nothing. This is not a principled kingdom he left us with, follow the rules and you got it. It's, how do you live in me? How do you listen enough to know what the next step is and get away from that all strategized planning where we've got to try and put everything together?
I do think that it is down to that fundamental, lean not unto your own understanding, but in all, not just some or the ones you can't figure out, but in all your ways, acknowledge him. And it's like, wait a minute, in that one sitting where he's saying, take nothing, why do we read the Bible as though I must distill the principles therein? Because it's like, you could distill all of the principles you want to extract, but that doesn't tell you how to apply them.
No.
You may not be in the same, I mean, I learned this in hermeneutics. If you don't know the context,
right,
you're not necessarily even extracting the right principle.
Right. And even if you do understand the context and extract the right principle, it may have no bearing in your context.
Yes, that's not communicated, because the way most people on most pastors on Saturday night are digging through is like principles. I got to get my three, I get my illustrations, and I got to have it put it together. And so there's this sense of I'm going to communicate something I know. It's like, you know what? I think we have turned Christianity into this head thing where knowledge will save me. It's like, no, I thought it said knowledge puffs up. It's not being stupid. It's like, but being dependent.
And it's not this knowledge. I think that's where we substitute the Bible for Christ in this journey. We took the Christ out of Christianity. We now have a Bible. We don't need to listen to him anymore. We don't need to follow. We got all the stuff we need right here. Well, I just look at people who say that and go, what Bible are you reading? Because my Bible says we don't have enough here. We have enough in him. He is the way, the truth, and the life.
It isn't the sufficiency of the scriptures. It's the sufficiency of him.
Exactly.
And that's revealed to me in the wisdom of the scriptures.
Absolutely.
So I don't make no mistake, everyone that's listening, we value the Bible immensely.
Absolutely.
But it isn't a good substitute for the God of the Bible.
No, in fact, it's a great tool to get to know the God of the Bible.
Yes.
But it's the God of the Bible
that I want to get to know.
That you want to live in.
Yes.
You don't want to become a sola scriptura dude where it says everything I need is in the Bible. I just got to take my situation, find the right subtext, pretext, proof text, and then I know what I'm supposed to do and I don't need God anymore. And that's where it's coming. We even took the language, the Word of God, and took it off of the Son and put it on a book. So then we could read stuff like Hebrews 4, the Word of God is living and active and sharper. Everybody who reads that scripture now thinks of the book, that the book is living and active. And the book, it's not talking about the book. It's talking about the Son. The Son is the Word of God. And that's where people, when we've made that fix, now people, all of a sudden, the intellectuals win the day. Whoever is best studied in Scripture is the one that needs to be looked up to, not the one who best knows the Father through the work of the Son. That's the ones that we need to engage conversation with.
Yeah.
It's not academic. Someone asked me the other day, how'd the academics get all the control? And I just said, you know what, we've got seminaries. Academics are the ones who survive seminaries, the ones who want to go. At the end of the day, academics is what's going to be what's exalted and lifted up because that's what's in their quiver. And we've missed who it is that's engaged. I mean, the best people I know who lived this journey around the world, some are scholars, not most, not even all. Some are. Most are not. Most are not writers. Most are not people you would know. If they passed by you on the street, you would not know, ooh, there's a man or a woman of God. You wouldn't know it unless you had them over to dinner and sat down and engaged their lives and go, wow, these people really know the God I know. And that's maybe where all that happens, in those conversations rather than in the pulpited places we put it.
Well, yeah, I mean, I look at the veneer of value that we define and then set on life and you're just going like, you know what? It seems to me that God had a different value system at times where it's like things we might consider mundane, he considers marvelous.
Yeah.
And you're just going like, I want to consider marvelous what he considers marvelous because I like how he looks at the world, at me.
Yeah.
I mean, for the psalmist to be able to say, you're fearfully and wonderfully made. Well, I want to know that. I want to feel that too. I want to get that. There's so many people that I guess have to say, I'm pretty sure on The Biggest Loser, they didn't feel fearfully and wonderfully made. When their body's aching, they're not feeling fearfully. And it's like, but you are. So we need to get his heart and his eyes on the scene where it's like he values just living life.
Which is part of maybe Paul's prayer in Colossians when he says, I pray that your heart and mind will be attuned to the ways in which God works.
Yeah.
And I just don't think religion taught us how God works. Religion is the strategic planning.
It's how to work God.
The intensity of the tyranny of the urgent and all that precedent. And we live that way with God. You know, the intensity of God, if you want to save me today, I need you to come in here. And when you get inside this, you know, God's not... I don't know the word I'm looking for. God's not overwhelmed with what's happening in your life today.
Yeah, God's not.
He's not rushing in with the cavalry because he wants to incubate Christ in you and let that grow and watch that change. And when we're looking in the panicked mode of, I've got to fix this, God, you got... I think that's... My prayers have been least effective when I've been in that white-knuckled, got to get God to do right now stuff, and feel like, man, my whole security in knowing him is bent on whether he fixes this in the next 2 hours or not.
Well, yeah, do you see any emergencies in the Bible?
Thinking. I don't see any.
I have thought about it. I can't come up with one where it looks as if, oh, my gosh, there's an emergency.
Where God's saying, oh, yeah. My gosh, I didn't know that was going to happen.
Yeah, you're just going like, wait a minute, that's not, I don't see anything as having snuck up on him and surprised him. And it's not just, well, he's omniscient and he's out of time, so, gee, that can't even happen. It's like, no, I think God's looking at all of this different. There were people that certainly felt like this was an emergency. There were people that certainly felt like they wanted to push the urgency of God, like, you need to do this now. And his response was, you know.
Yeah, my brother is dying. you must come now. I'll be along and later.
Yeah, and
I had to drive poor Mary and Martha nuts.
I mean, emotionally hurtful.
Oh, gosh.
Because we don't think, because God isn't jumping at the same level we are, that communicates his disinterest or his lack of love for me. And it's like, no, that hasn't changed. Maybe what's missing is he isn't looking at it as an emergency, nor is he assuming he's not actively engaged.
Well, you can bank on this. He's not looking at it the way we are.
Yeah.
And of those two, I would think how he's looking at it would be where I want to get my life to be. I want to get inside how he's seeing the things unfolding in my life rather than I've got to get him to see this from my perspective so
yeah.
He will do what's best, which is what I'm thinking has to be done.
Yeah, I think we need a paradigm shift in how we look at stuff. And I don't want to just, the human experience. People are like, I get tons of email. Where do I get it? How do I get it? It's not available yet, but in Denver.
You're driving them nuts with that.
No, I'm sure. In Denver, in Phoenix, and in Dallas on April 9th, it's going to debut.
How come you couldn't get one in Los Angeles? What's wrong with you?
L.A. isn't the best market for that.
I hear you.
So it did do one night in L.A. It just was too short notice. But in Phoenix, in Dallas, and in Denver on April 9th, it's going to be in Harkins Theater someplace. They can email me if they want specifics, and I can send them a link. But I would just encourage folks that are interested.
You're
in that.
Inviting email? You,
yes.
Can I just hear
I actually,
you?
Yes, you did.
Oh, my gosh. Well, do you have a commercial interest in this, Brad?
No, I actually don't at this juncture.
Good. At this juncture.
I don't.
Okay.
But I really think that thing, that was a massive gift to me. And so for all those that were interested, at least it's available in those locales to begin with.
Better than Avatar.
Yeah.
Yeah, good.
Yeah. I mean, That's
a low standard for me, high standard for you.
I loved Avatar.
I know you
but
did.
This doesn't have all the bells and whistles. This has a profound, it changes the way you see stuff. And I went, no way.
And hopefully that's what God's doing in all of us. If we can let this journey season in our hearts and walk away from the cliff of panic and emergency and God's got to do right now, we can back away from that cliff and live inside of him. And I think we'll be better tuned to the ways in which God works.
Oh, absolutely.
And then it will unfold in our life without all our
anxiety
and strategic planning.
By visiting our website, thegodjourney.com.